Here we go again with another edition of After the Buzzer from the Man Cave. It's unfortunate that it's not a visual medium, a visual podcast in this case, because Gordy's wearing his We Owe You One t-shirt on a day when we might argue that the Sixers owe more than one. Gordy, your thoughts on that subject?
Well, we witnessed a game two, Sixers-Knicks, that in the last 27.4 seconds, with the Sixers up five...
Let's break it down. You can't lose
that game. I went back just out of morbid curiosity to see exactly how this unfolded. With 27.4, Rick Brunson of the Knicks, who has had two horrid shooting games, just horrid.
And I would argue that they've done a really good job.
They have. Kelly Oubre in particular.
I like when you... guys like that, players like that, I like when you kind of come at them from the side, you know, to contest the shot. I think that's an irritant. I think Steph Curry has been bothered by that over the years. And anyway.
Because you start seeing ghosts, you know, the ones that aren't there.
They've done a really good job on him, but sorry to interrupt.
Anyway, Brunson with 27.4 seconds left, the Knicks down five. He makes this ridiculous three where the ball hits the rim, goes straight up in the air, comes down through the hoop. Okay,
and I just looked at it again, and it hit the rim on a direction where, I mean, it even makes more. It's in defiance of physics. I can't see how that happened.
Correct. Earlier today, I'm writing a piece about worst playoff losses in Sixers history, so. To that end, I called Bob Ryan, who's been on this podcast, longtime Boston Globe writer, covered. So he mentioned that Bird did that in a playoff game against the Sixers, and he also mentioned, famously, in the 1969 finals, Don Nelson against the Lakers shot one. I think it hit the back rim, went straight up.
That one was, I swear to God, I remember that. I know 1969, you're saying, Mike, you're an old dude, but I absolutely remember that.
Do I.
And I was a Laker guy then because of Jerry West. And
of course.
I was like... Are you kidding me? Because that went way up in the air.
Yep.
And straight down in the basket.
Anyway.
It was one of those possessions, too, where the shot clock's running out and they're not getting anything.
Okay, so that leads to just mayhem in the last 27 seconds. So Kyle Lowry runs to take the ball out. He inbounds it to Tyrese Maxey, who's like kind of pinned against the baseline. And as somebody has slowed it down and showed that Brunson was grabbing his jersey so the ball kind of goes in the air. Maxey gets it back, then proceeds to the corner where he falls, gets tackled, whatever, loses the ball. And Josh Hart of the Knicks picks it up, throws it to Dante DiVincenzo, who takes a three, misses it. Now, underneath the basket, Joel Embiid is boxing out Josh Hart. And for good reason, Josh Hart has been all over the offensive boards in these first two games. And Tobias Harris is kind of left in a position where he's boxing out OG Anunoby, which leaves Isaiah Hartenstein a free run to the boards. He gets the rebound in a crowd, and then he kind of like pushes it out to OG Anunoby a few feet outside the lane. Anunoby throws it back out to DiVincenzo, top of the key. He makes it. Sixers are now down one. Now, in the midst of all this, and you can see it on the tape, and Nick Nurse said this after the game, he was trying to call timeout twice, like before the inbounded, and after Maxey gets tackled in the corner. And you can see it. He clearly is.
There's no doubt about it. Is there more of the rundown here?
No, that's pretty much it. The one thing I did want to add, the Sixers finally get their timeout, and they ran a play, a last-second play, which was the same play they ran against San Antonio a few weeks back, where Maxey starts in the backcourt, kind of gets a running start, rubs his guy off a screen, and he got a layup. He got a wide open layup against San Antonio. Against the Knicks, they played it really well. Hartenstein
made a great play there.
He did. He didn't get much of it, but he got just enough.
Talk about a guy who's gotten much better.
Yes. He played a great game last night.
And they don't have Julius Randle, and I don't think it matters because of his development as a player.
Yeah. But anyway, so the Sixers lose 104-101. They're down 2-0 in a best of seven that goes back to Philadelphia Thursday and Sunday. I will be at those two games. And just to continue on the point, I called Ryan just to say, is this the worst loss in Sixers playoff history? And he said, I think it goes to the head of the class. But then he added quickly, but it wasn't a game seven. But for sheer wackery and like, how do you lose that game?
Yeah.
That's way up there.
Yeah, and you know, you're... stuff happens because of the 3-point shot.
Yes.
You know, that 5-point lead with whatever it was, 27 seconds. I mean, it's still possible. It's because of the 3-point shot. But so many things happen. And, you know, Lowry was inbounding the ball when they inbounded the beat.
And he was probably in too much of a rush. I mean, I sort of get it. You want to do it before they can really set the D. So that was, I guess that's smart.
He was in a hurry. But, I mean, he could have called the timeout.
Right. This is true, too. And they had their most experienced guys in the game. Yep. They had Batum in the game. They had Embiid. They had Maxey. They had Lowry. And who was the... Oh, Tobias Harris. That's as experienced a lineup as they can have. So everybody just kind of spit the bit. And, you know, there are those who want to say that this is some great conspiracy that the refs screwed. And the Sixers are, in fact, filing a grievance about this. But, you know, I think in the heat of the moment, you know... Maybe the refs didn't see Nurse, but I mean, the second one, he was particularly emphatic about trying to call a timeout. Yeah. He was like 1 foot on the court. So
he probably should have jumped up and down and waved his arms. I mean, I know that sounds stupid, but he probably should have really done. I've seen that happen, like in high school games. Yes. But in that case, I can't remember an exception to this. It's always been the play's down at the other end, and the coach is on this end, and he's trying to get their attention. Right. And I remember Lancaster Catholic losing a state tournament game a couple years ago in that exact situation, and Joe Klazis was irate, but the refs were watching something that was happening.
In this case, the referee was literally like 6 feet
right
away.
Right in front of Nurse. Everybody's kind of choking in that situation a little bit. I thought... Maxey got fouled before, as you said, Brunson grabbing his jersey, before they inbounded it. After they caught it, I was okay with them not calling that one. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, he kind of fell. His body was at such an odd angle. I don't know if he panicked a little bit or what, or thought, if I fall over, I'll get a call.
I don't know.
I don't know what happened there. But the other thing that I want to bring up is, the Knicks are the best offensive rebounding team in the NBA.
And they're playing like it.
And it's because they have these guys who just have that rebounding thing where they think... We've all played pickup games against guys like this. Who just think, I'm going to get every rebound, and I'm going to just almost upset. And you have to find those guys and put a body on him. Hartenstein, in that play, he's standing 20 feet from the basket, and he just goes straight down the lane and gets the rebound. I don't know who to blame specifically, but somebody's got to be... You got to be so conscious of that, that you're finding him and putting your body on him.
And how about the presence of mind? He didn't try to tip it in. They were thinking, win. Let's go ahead. Yeah. You know, it's like just to throw it out. And a lot of people will say that's the best time to shoot a three, like either on the break or after an offensive rebound, because it's such a scramble kind of thing. Yeah. And that proved to be the case.
I read a piece today in The Athletic, and I'm sorry I can't remember the writer's name, because it was a really good piece. And he said that the Knicks actually practice that, where if you get an offensive rebound and you're inside of the charge block circle, you put it back up. Otherwise, get settled and find somebody, because the defense is always messed up and you can find somebody to shoot threes.
Okay, so this led to my trying to make a list of the worst Sixers playoff losses, and it seems like they lead the world in frustrating playoff losses. So here's the list I came up with. 1965, the Havlicek stole the ball game. That's it. That was a game 7. 1981, the Sixers are leading the Celtics by 7 in game 7 after the Celtics came back and tied the series. They're up 7 with 5 and change left. They had 1 point the rest of the game. They lose that game, lose the series.
Okay, I have specific points about both of those two. We'll get to them.
The third one is probably not a great one, but I had the Ben Simmons against Atlanta game 7 in 2018. That's sort of... but the other one is the Kawhi Leonard game in 2019. Yeah, where it bounces on the rim 4 times, falls, Sixers are done.
Yeah, that's another crazy bounce thing. Oh, man.
So that's my list, but I'm sure you have thoughts. Go.
Well, the Havlicek stole the ball thing. I watched video of that. I found video of that on YouTube within the last year, fairly recently.
Right.
I could not believe the Sixers ran nothing there. it was Hal Greer was inbounding the ball.
Right.
Wilt is standing. Here's Hal Greer Wilt, on the baseline. Wilt is standing kind of behind the rim with
with Russell between him and Greer, and the backboard between him and Greer, how are you going to get him the ball? Even Wilt, I mean, Wilt is Superman. How are you going to get four guys standing around? Havlicek didn't steal the ball.
No.
Greer, out of desperation, threw it to him.
Yeah. And here's the other part of it. He didn't actually steal it. He kind of deflected it to Sam Jones. So that was sort of embellishment in and of itself. But that's...
Yeah, that was really embellishment. Yeah. I mean, and then the other... The one you mentioned with Bird, yes. 81.
Yes.
The one thing I remember about that is people literally getting up and leaving. And people going up and congratulating the Sixers GM and stuff like I don't know who exactly, but I mean yeah. People were, this is over.
Yeah.
People were really thinking this is over.
Yeah, I went back and watched the fourth quarter of that game today just out of sheer lunacy, and the last 10 possessions, 1 point, and that was Mo Cheeks. And here's Dick Stockton, my least favorite basketball announcer ever. Yeah. He was describing, quote unquote, the action. And so he, before Cheek shoots, the Sixers are down two after Bird makes a bank shot to put the Celtics in.
I remember the bank shot. Yeah.
And so Cheeks is going to go to the foul line to shoot two. He was kind of hurt. He got banged up on, he was on the floor. There was like a lag between the foul being called. It was a block on Gerald Henderson and Cheeks actually shooting. And in between, ML Carr walks up to Cheeks, and Dick Stockton goes, "Well, I'm sure he's going, no hard feelings." And I said that to Bob Ryan on the phone, and he just started laughing. He goes, "I know, ML. I know he didn't say that." And I know that. We all know that.
Dick, oh my God, I'm tone deaf Stockton.
Yes, I mean, oh my God, I wanted to reach in like 40 years after the fact and strangle him. I mean, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I'm sure that's what you want to do.
I'm sure that's exactly, yes.
Have you ever been around? You don't even have to have met Amal Carr. You just have to watch games where he was being a dick on the bench.
Which leads to one of the greatest lines I ever read in a Philadelphia column. It was by Mark Wicker, who was then working in the Philadelphia market.
And it's a terrific column.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. So he wrote one time, it wasn't that game, but he said, "And Amal Carr, the Celtics' 12th man and the best argument for the 11-man roster in the NBA." Which I think is one of the great rips you can come up with.
Yeah, really.
But that game certainly has to be on the list. I don't know. I'm not so keen about the Ben Simmons one, but I mean, I might include that just for
the
recency.
Ben Simmons was just, oh my God, what a crazy, what
are you doing
to him? That was more on Ben Simmons than anything else. That one against the Celtics was bad. I mean, that's a long time ago. The one where the Kavlicek stole the ball. I mean, that just was. I mean, that's such a legendary play, sort of, in the history of the game. And I remember, like watching it on, watching the video of it, thinking, oh my God, come on.
Yeah, so that's Sixers history in a nutshell. They've had some of the most illustrious players in NBA history, Julius, Will, Barkley, Iverson, go on and on and on, and now Embiid. And they have three championships in their long history.
Yeah.
It's like, what are they, cursed?
Yeah, there's probably, maybe only the Celtics and the Lakers have had better, more great players, more historically great players. I mean, Barkley, Iverson, Wilt, Dr. J, obviously, Moses Malone, and now Joel Embiid.
Right.
And Maxey is rapidly joining the club.
Maxey was, he certainly deserved better. So I still feel like the Sixers have a better team than the Knicks, but I'm not sure that that's going to matter because it just seems like, I don't know. Is fate on their side or something?
It is. It's a weird thing because at some point you wonder, and if you're Nick Nurse, I think you have to be thinking, is there something really going on here? Is there some flaw that or is this just a fluke? They can still win this series, but the problem is Embiid. The problem is Embiid
is not healthy.
He's just not even close to being healthy.
He's been pretty good for a guy playing on... Last night, he was really good for a guy playing on one leg.
No doubt.
But at the end of the game, he couldn't move.
Yeah, he couldn't move, and he can't be the factor that he normally is defensively.
Mm-hmm.
Even rebounding, he had 10 rebounds last night, but even that, he's not the factor that he normally is, which is huge in this series.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's not really going to be on the post either. Mm-hmm. He's not really going to... I mean, you can put fouls on Hartenstein, maybe, if you have a healthy Embiid. I think the Sixers could win this series pretty comfortably if he was 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is the old theory that The role players play better at home. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they didn't get much. Batum, Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield looks like a 45-year-old man.
What is he doing? Yeah, he's there to shoot, and he's not shooting, and he's not making any shots.
He really looks unathletic, I think.
Oh, God.
And Batum. Yeah. Batum.
I expected better from him, honestly.
Yes, I absolutely did, too. I felt like he was Maybe those guys get home and things change a little.
Yeah, and maybe some of the Knicks. I mean, Josh Hart this year, I mean, he shot 31% from three, but he's shot it really well in the first two games.
Yeah.
And the Sixers have been giving him shots. You know, they've been loading up their defense against Brunson, and they've been giving Hart shots, and he's making them. Now, historically, he's been a better shooter than that, but this year, 31%. There was a very good story on ESPN.com by Ryan Hawkinsmith, where he talked about the Knicks' Nova connection with Brunson, Hart, and DiVincenzo. Is a really, really good piece. Many standout moments. One of them was, well, they just talked about what an irritant Hart was, like, to his teammates as well as the other team, and just how, you know, he was like one of those guys you wanted to punch. And, in fact, DiVincenzo tried to hit him with a weight one time.
Wow.
So it's a hell of a story. So I would highly recommend that to our listening audience. Ryan Hawkinsmith on ESPN.com writing about the Knicks Nova connection, which is really, you know, obviously the core of their team. I mean, Brunson has not shot it well at all. He was 9-for-29 last night, 8-for-26 in game one. But I think that's where the whole Randall factor comes into play. They can load up their defense because Randall isn't there.
Yeah, and again, I think they've really got... I've said before, I'm just amazed at the career that Brunson has had.
Yeah.
He just doesn't seem that athletic to me. And I think the Sixers have exploited that in a way that I can't understand why nobody else can. And part of that is Nick Nurse really knowing what he's doing as a defensive coach.
Yeah.
But they've done a good job with it. Oubre has done a nice job. I mean, they've done a good job of that. So I'm not sure that's just that the shots aren't falling.
No, I think they've defended him really well.
I think they have a good idea there. Somebody said on ESPN this morning, if you're a Knicks fan and you happen to run into Jay Wright on the street, you should go praise you, because he has managed to infuse the Knicks with all that good stuff. And I think that's a real thing.
Yeah, we've talked about it before, just about Nova players and guards in particular, how they always seem to get better, and at least when Jay was there, and there's plenty of proof in this series.
I wonder if Jay Wright isn't historically underrated now.
An interesting point.
I'm so impressed with what he did there, what's happened since he left.
Yeah.
Not much.
Yeah. I guess part of it is it's a different era, too. So we'll see. I mean, Kyle Neptune's had 2 years in.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But it is, we've talked about this before, it is hard to be the guy to follow the guy.
It is. Okay. Yeah. I'm not killing him, Neptune. Maybe the fact that it's a new era is one of the reasons why Wright was happy to leave.
A lot of people have indicated as such. Yeah. So what else do you want to talk about? The Nuggets took a 2-0 lead over the Lakers last night, too, with Jamal Murray hitting a very Kawhi-like shot over Anthony Davis to win the game.
Yeah.
Which is a hell of a play. And Jamal Murray is one of the more overlooked great players.
Really good. He's one of those guys. There's so many good guards in the league. How many good guards are there that are around the same age?
That's right.
That were one and dones from Kentucky.
Yeah, well, there's Maxey, there's him, and who else am I?
Well, Gilgeous Alexander,
De'Aaron Fox,
Booker.
Yeah. That's a pretty good list.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
They're all about the same age, and they're all one and done from Kentucky.
Yeah. So, which again leads to, you wonder why John Calipari no longer is working there. It's like, why didn't he get more out of that?
Yeah, that's right. It's great that you're getting these guys ready for the draft, but if you're a Kentucky nut, you want to win more basketball games.
Now, speaking of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the other night in game one against New Orleans doesn't have Zion Williamson, although they might have him at some point in this series, but he made a ridiculous shot a 3-point play at the end of that game where he got fouled. It was sort of a phantom call, but he was like sort of around the right elbow. And he just sort of threw it at the rim and it went in. And he's one of the more unique players. He averages like 3 threes a game, where most good guards will shoot at least twice that many, maybe 3 times that many.
He is unusual. Yeah.
But he gets to his spots. He's like DeMar DeRozan that way. He has no problem getting to his spots, even though you know where he wants to go.
Yeah.
And he'll get his points. He is a really smooth, really interesting player.
He's something. That was a great game. There were not a lot of great games in the first.
No, there were not.
The first couple games of all these series. The Lakers, back to the Lakers, they were up 20 in the second half.
Right.
And ended up losing by 2. And there were some calls at the end of that. And there was one where D'Angelo Russell got hit in the head, and they replayed it.
Right.
And
still didn't call it?
I think what they probably said was that it kind of happened after he released the ball.
Still.
Saying it was a good call. Yeah. It was a foul. But I think they probably looked at it and thought, did he, the ball's already gone. Did he gain any advantage from this?
I guess.
I think that's probably what they saw there.
Right.
But that was a foul. Yeah, that was pretty bad. And then LeBron goes into his press conference and really does it. They ask him one question and he does a tirade about the refs and then walks up and gets up and leaves. So he's planting the seed going forward.
Yeah, which will happen in series. It happens all the time.
Yep.
But, to me, the last person who should complain about getting calls is LeBron.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's been granted a lot of latitude over the course of his career.
He actually mentioned the Knicks and Sixers game.
Is that right?
What are we doing? What's wrong here,
Mm-hmm.
With the officiating in the league and the replay and everything, and I guess he was talking about Nurse not getting a timeout. Maybe I don't know what he was referring.
That was still crazy to me because it's really obvious that he is certainly trying to get a timeout.
Yeah.
Chris Finch's Timberwolves, they jump out over the Suns with a big game from Anthony Edwards. And
I thought they looked great.
Yeah,
I thought they defended really well in that game. Mm-hmm. And Edwards is a freak show.
Oh my gosh,
so athletic and. There's a lot of good players in the NBA right now, mm-hmm. and a lot of good, relatively young, crazy, athletic players. But
near the top of the list.
Yep, and they're playing well, I think they're going to be a tough out.
Nobody really thinks about them that much.
They're
right there with. I think they're the third seed. Yeah, they're the third seed, but it was real close with them and OKC. And Nuggets.
With Denver, with all the top three.
It was real close. It was like a game, I think, separated, or maybe tiebreakers even.
I would put Minnesota second in the West. I think Denver, of course, would be number one. And again, we haven't talked about Jokic yet, but at the down the stretch in that game last night against the Lakers, he was amazing. And interestingly, the Lakers have clearly we're going to let Anthony Davis guard him because he's a great defender, and we're not going to double him because he's a great passer, which is a defensible argument.
Yeah,
but then he becomes Kevin McHale, and he does. He's
got a lot.
Yeah.
Once I talked to Finch about that, because they played them last year in the playoffs, and he said that's always the question that you have before you go into a series against Jokic: do you make him a scorer? Or do you make him a passer? And his answer was always, you'd rather make him a scorer because, he'll score a lot, but he doesn't. That's really not what he likes to do. He really does like to pass. He's really a unique player.
Right, except when you really get down to the end
mm-hmm.
and there's 3 minutes left, double him and make it pass, and you at least force somebody to make a three.
Mm-hmm.
They missed the three. Nobody shoots 75% from the three.
Right. I get you.
I think that argument could be made.
He had a big boy triple-double last night. 27 points, 20 rebounds, and 10 assists. That is a big boy triple-double.
and he scored a lot down the stretch.
Yep.
And really, they rode him down the stretch. Murray made a great shot. One little note about that, it was really kind of funny because I was looking at this little story on ESPN, and he said, I couldn't see it. I didn't know it went in. I just was falling backwards. And then they showed, this morning, they showed a camera angle from kind of from the other end of the court, sort of floor level. and he could see the whole thing. Yeah, I mean, it's almost like it's a better story if I was so buried that I couldn't even see it. And then Anthony Davis himself
gets in the
middle of the celebration.
Yeah, I kind of felt bad for him. Yeah, I was like, yeah, it's like he's like right in their bench as they're jumping on each other. That's kind of sucks.
Yeah, that
but sucks. I mean, which actually leads to a little tangent on my part. It's like we've all interviewed people who kind of know what we want to hear. And it happens. And this is an example. It does happen. And here's an example. For years, Penn State guys would say, I got hurt on the last play of practice. It must have happened 10 times guys said that. Well, yeah, it was your last play of practice.
But that's what it meant by that.
But it happened again and again. These guys obviously said, here, watch this. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So it's amazing. Yeah, it's just amazing coincidence that 10 guys across the years got hurt on the last play of practice.
Go figure. Go figure.
But, I mean, you've run into that, I'm sure. Or people, like, kind of jazz things up a little, like, embellish maybe a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes you're sort of sympathetic to it because, you know, we are storytelling here, you know. But, I mean, don't make stuff up. It was funny because they showed this camera angle, and Murray is just staring at the ball. He's not just... His eyes are fixated right on. Oh, I never saw it. I was buried in the...
In the humanity. Okay.
Sure. Oh, the humanity. But anyway, a lot of these series, I mean, OKC, that looks like a really good series.
I like that series, especially if Zion comes back. I mean, they look pretty good without Zion. I mean, they know what the hell they're doing.
They have some depth.
Yeah, they do. They throw a lot of guys out there that maybe you never heard of. Like Trey Murphy can really play.
Yeah. He's pretty good. And Nance is a sneaky good player.
And Jonas Valanciunas is kind of, you know, he kind of muscled Chet Holmgren. He had 20 boards in the first game, too.
Yeah, that was a good example of the old keep him off the glass thing. You know, Orlando did not look good. No. Orlando's
They're down 0-2 to Cleveland.
Yeah, and they're just a bad offensive team. And it almost reminds me a little bit of Miami a couple years ago when they were hit like historically bad offensively. Mm-hmm. And then they ended up going to the finals, except they were a veteran group coached by Eric Spoelstra, and Orlando is not, you know. That's the contrast there. Indiana did not play well.
No, they lost. Have you ever seen that in a game where Dame Lillard for the Bucks scored 35 in the first half and didn't score again? I don't know if I've ever seen that.
That's weird.
I mean, I've seen like where a guy scores like the majority, but never completely scores.
I didn't realize that until today because I didn't watch that after they got way ahead. But then Indiana made a little bit of a run there for a while.
Right.
Of course, Milwaukee's playing without Giannis, but Indiana defensively.
Not good.
Kind of like they're the inverse. They're the negative image of Orlando.
Yeah, and a lot of people were disappointed with Tyrese Halliburton in that game that he really didn't show up.
Yeah, his star is maybe a little tarnished lately. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there, but a very talented guy and does a lot of things, but...
He says he's kind of flatlined. He started out the season like he was one of the five best players in the league, and he's kind of flatlined the second half.
Yeah, he was almost like, you would almost say the equivalent of Gilgeous Alexander, but not nobody thinks that now.
Yeah, and on the other side of the bracket, we had the Clippers beating the Mavericks in game one, and Doncic and Kyrie Irving both had good games, but nobody else did. No, they were the only. There was one other guy in double figures. I think it was it PJ Washington.
They didn't look good at all. And I even thought the Clippers did a decent job on Luka. I mean, even though he scored,
He didn't shoot it great.
He didn't look like he sometimes looks out of shape. Almost. Yeah. He's such a big, bulky guy. Out of shape and slow. I thought Kyrie played really well in that game, but the rest of the Mavericks,
they didn't show up. Yeah. And James Harden had 28 for those Clips. How about that guy? He's clutch, huh?
Oh yeah. Don't get me started. Let's get Dave on the phone.
How can the Sixers get a guy like that?
Shake your head.
But I mean, who do you like? I mean, this is way early. I mean, who do you like coming out of the, you know, meeting in the finals right now?
Well, I this is boring, but Boston and Denver.
I think so, too. Yeah. I mean, I think they're the two best teams.
Yeah, I think they're the two best teams.
And I'd kind of be interested in seeing how that would play out, because that's a really interesting
matchup. Yeah, I'd love to see that series. We got miles to go before we get there, and the playoffs, it's always really interesting at the start, and then it sort of bogs down for a while, and then, like, by the middle of next week, I'll be going, who's winning this series? you know, there's some of that, but then it plays out, and teams get eliminated, and it's great. I love the NBA playoffs.
I do, too. A lot of people don't. I mean, and I get it, and everybody says, oh, it's too long. Okay, whatever.
Well, it is too long, but still.
Yeah, I still enjoy it. I mean, whatever. I mean, it's certainly played at a different speed. It's really an interesting
thing. Oh, it's way different. And again, you can see in some cases, you know, Brunson would be a good example. Some of the stuff that he gets away with easily in the regular season, I think is going to be harder to pull off as they go forward and has been in the first two games against the Sixers.
There's many things that interest me about the playoffs. One of them is just how the bad blood develops over the course of seeing somebody seven times over 2 weeks. I mean, it really is pretty fierce, which leads me to another Dick Stocktonism that made me crazy. I watched the fourth quarter of this game from 1981, and at the very end of the third quarter, it was Rick Roby and Steve Mix squared off.
Yeah.
And it looked like Roby might have connected with a punch. And this is down at the end of the garden where the Boston bench was. So Mix was down there by himself. And, of course, Dick Stockton in his infinite wisdom is saying, oh, and Bobby Jones is down there mixing it up. How much of a moron?
So he confused Mix and Jones. Yes,
They
look almost identical, don't they? Yeah,
no. And Bobby Jones, he's such a thug.
Oh, anyway. I know. Yeah.
always getting in fights.
Oh,
my God.
Dick Stockton.
So, yeah, Dick Stockton, he makes me crazy. Even 40 years later, he just makes me crazy.
He's enough to make you bananas.
He is that.
Yeah, and he was so sick. He had such a great career. Like, the networks seemed to...
Yes.
I mean, a relatively, really successful career in broadcasting. And I always thought, man...
I just don't see it. What he brought. So this year is also this week is also the NFL draft, Mike. And it's going to be quarterback heavy. And you've seen two of the quarterbacks who are going to be among the half dozen or so are going to be picked in the first or second round. You've seen J.J. McCarthy from Michigan. You've seen Michael Penix when he was at Indiana. He ended his career at Washington. What do you like about those two guys?
Well, Penix, to me, I thought he improved tremendously after he left Indiana. Part of that is the coaching from the guy at Washington, who is now the guy at Alabama,
right,
who is really a highly regarded guy and he brought his coordinator with him to Alabama. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But Penix, great deep ball guy.
Right.
And very athletic. I did not think he played well in the national championship game, that game brought his decision making into question for me. There's a lot of college quarterbacks that look great when the throws are sort of obvious, I thought Justin Fields was that way. I was blown away by Justin Fields, and then not that he's not going to have a good career. I think he can still save his career, but he, to me, to some extent, was a guy who was a creation of Ohio State's system and the quality of wide receivers that he was working with.
Not the first time that's happened to an Ohio State quarterback. Right. Not the first time.
That's correct. McCarthy, it's interesting when you think a guy is kind of a sleeper and you're higher on them than everybody else is, and then the consensus overwhelms you. Like now people are higher on him than I am. You know, I think he has a good chance to be I think he's a little bit of a project.
Mm-hmm.
Never did the sophisticated reading and throwing thing. Although he made some incredible this highlight reel that they keep showing on ESPN, he makes some incredible throws in that, where they're showing it from behind him, you know, and he's and he's a pretty big guy and a pretty athletic guy. He can run. He has a chance. All of these quarterbacks I don't have any idea. If the kid from USC,
Caleb Williams,
if he had turned pro after the 2022 season, I mean, at that point, I was as high on him as any college quarterback since Andrew Luck. I thought he was phenomenal. Now, last year, he wasn't as good. A lot of people think, well, that's because USC was defensively was horrible, and he was trying to force things. Whatever. So that's the kind of doubt I have about him. I would still take him first.
I think that's
and I think it's decided now. I think the Bears have decided they're going to take him first. Every one of them I have a little bit of doubt about. Every one of these guys I have a little bit of doubt about. I haven't seen I've seen them all play.
Right.
Maybe I haven't seen them play enough. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, this is Pro Football Focus's draft. They have the Bears taking Caleb Williams. Commanders taking Drake May. They have a mock trade. I don't understand why the Patriots would trade pick number 3, but they have the Broncos trading with the Patriots and taking Jaden Daniels at 3.
So the Broncos get Jaden Daniels.
Yeah. So I don't understand why the Patriots would trade out of that. There must be some logic to that. And they have McCarthy going to the Raiders at 9, and they have Penix going to the Patriots at 12. So I guess
Penix seems like he trails the other.
Yes,
4.
He does. Yeah, that seems.
And that probably I can see that, I guess. I think in Drake May, people are seeing Josh Allen.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think that's what they're seeing. I think he's been erratic enough in his college career that there's, you know, but you can see talent there, obviously, and size. And I think that's what they see. I think Daniels is seen as maybe a safer bet.
Yeah.
But maybe not quite the upside. I don't know. I saw Daniels. The most I saw him play this year was in the opener against Florida State.
Okay.
And in that game, I thought he made a lot of bad decisions, even just basic stuff like read option and run the ball, whether to keep it or... At halftime, I remember Brian Kelly, you know, they're doing the halftime interview where the guy runs up to the coach and that's what he said. He said, we're making some really stupid decisions in situations where we could be moving the chain and putting points on the board. And that's what I saw, too.
That doesn't bode well.
No, that doesn't bode well. And I'm not even talking about complicated read the passing game thing, you know, change the protection and throw the guy open, all of that stuff. I'm just talking about read option, you know. So I don't know. Maybe I'm putting too much stock in that because
I think that's a fair point because I think at that level where everybody is a great athlete, it's like how you think the game, how you process, especially that position, how you process what's in front of you.
Yeah, that feels to me just like football IQ.
Yeah,
not so much like film study or
nothing
anything
like that. Just what you see, how you think on your feet. I think that's a huge part.
Yeah,
of
so
who
that,
succeeds.
That gives me pause about Daniels, although. A, he can really run. I mean, he's fast, and he can make all the throws. He's another guy that throws. He's comparable to Penix, I think, in terms of throwing the maybe better in terms of throwing the deep ball. So, I don't know. Mm-hmm. They all have things to recommend him, and they all have.
And here's the thing: always about taking quarterbacks early. There's pressure to play them too soon. I think, and it ruins guys.
Yeah,
it ruins them far more often than the other. Extreme.
And that would be my concern with McCarthy.
Yep.
That would be my concern with May. Mm-hmm. And certainly that would be my concern with Penix, too, I think. Yeah. Maybe less so with Daniels and Williams. But then you get into this, well, it's an understandable thing. It's the most important position on the field.
Right.
But it's the hardest to judge, to scout.
Yeah.
And then you have this factor of the rookie pay scale where, you know, maybe we can hit on this guy and then we'll have this huge up on everybody else because we're not paying the quarterback much. So, I mean, to an extent, I can understand how people turn into lunatics about the quarterback thing, but only to an extent. It's crazy. Yeah. And the other thing is, There's a million cornerbacks and there's a million wide receivers in this draft. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden we're not hearing about edge rushers. Remember every year, you got to have edge rushers. The most important thing. So a guy like Chop Robinson.
And he's down at the bottom of the first round.
Yeah, who I think he would almost be I mean, he's an elite guy. I think he's an elite guy. And I think Adisa Isaac is a pretty solid guy, too.
I've seen him on some mocks, like in third round, maybe.
I think he's going to get drafted. Yeah, I think so, too. He's going to get drafted.
Well, speaking of this mock draft, this is interesting to me. They have Olufoshana going 19th, which is lower than most other mocks. They usually have him in the top 10.
Well, I think he's dropped a little bit.
Interesting.
The guy from Notre Dame.
Joe Alt.
Yeah, who I think he's seen as a better run blocker. He's seen and just as good a pass blocker as Fashanu. And then I think there's a guy from Alabama whose stock has been going up.
Let me see.
A tackle. Maybe I'm thinking of the wrong school.
No, he's an edge rusher.
Maybe I have the wrong. Yeah,
there's Joe Alt there.
Yeah, we're not going that high. Okay. There's another guy in there. There's another
this
guy.
This guy from Oregon State.
Maybe that's the guy.
Talese Fuaga.
Yeah, maybe that's the guy. Yeah. And it almost feels like Fashanu is kind of third now, whereas, you know, 6 months ago it felt like he was 1A or 1B. You know?
Right. Yeah. So anyway, I mean, he'll certainly go in the first round.
He's going to go in the first round, and he's going to make a lot of money because that position makes a lot of money.
Yeah, you know? And this mock draft that we happen to be looking at, it has the Eagles are picking 22nd, and they have him taking offensive tackle Marius Mims, which makes sense to me because as this analysis points out, Lane Johnson is 34, and of course, you know, Jason Kelsey just retired, so their offensive line is kind of, you know, heading toward a rebuild, and they've certainly put a lot of stock in both lines, and that's really been their strength these last several years. They've really built. On both sides as well. So that wouldn't be a shock if they would take a guy like Amarius.
And the other thing you hear is corner with the Eagles, which makes sense. Yeah. And there's a lot of those. Maybe they're thinking there's more of those than there are tackles. Because tackles are pretty...
Yeah, they're hard to find.
Tackles who can really do it, who are game changers, are pretty rare.
So let me ask you this, Mike Gross. What is your favorite draft cliche? That they have all this jargon that has grown up around... the draft, which I actually kind of dig mock drafts. I don't know why. It's one of those guilty pleasures.
I like the draft. Yeah. I like anything that's like the process.
Yeah.
You know, how do you do it? How does it work? How do you build a team?
I agree.
How do you, I love that kind of stuff. I'm not anywhere near the fan as far as rooting for teams that I was when I got into this Dodge.
Right.
but I'm as interested in sports as I've ever been for that reason.
Yeah.
That's the reason. Yeah, I like that.
Okay.
Anyway.
Your favorite draft cliche?
I think it's got to be pad level.
Yes, pad level. Yes. Pad drink, level. Everybody
great.
Drink.
Pad level is great because these guys. They always say, well, the guy that gets lower always wins. Well, are you going to have guys like burying under the earth?
I mean, burrowing into the ground.
A burrowing animal.
I like Violent Hands was one I saw.
Oh, Violent Hands is good. Yeah. Yes. And the linemen talk about that all the time. The kids talk about Rucci was talking about that. Yeah. Rucci said something. This must be coming from Troutwine, the Penn State O-line coach. I've got to play with my hands. I got to play with my head up like I don't have a helmet on, so I can really deliver the hands.
I kind of love
hands.
It. I kind of
the violent
love it.
Hands. Yeah,
violent hands. Yes, yes.
I asked him. You know, he was talking about he likes Troutwine because of the mechanics and because of some of the things. And so I said, well, give me an example. You know, and he had a pretty good answer the run blocking piece and the pass blocking piece. He had a pretty good answer to that, and that was part of it, you know.
I love it.
Stand up straight like I don't have a helmet on.
I kind of love that.
Violent hands.
So that's, I do the whole thing. Here was a funny thing. As you know, I like the Packers, and they had their press conference with the Packers general manager, Brian Gutekunst, yesterday. And they have to do that. I mean, every GM in the league has to meet with the media in the days before the draft. And he basically said, well, you know, I'm not going to tell the truth here. Which, you know, and the beat guys I heard that talking about it on podcasts and such, they said, well, you know, I can kind of respect that. And he said, you know, how they have these certain number of players they bring in for visits. And he basically admitted that they bring certain guys in just as a smokescreen for other teams.
Now, this reminds me of something. The Redskins, just like the other day, like Friday, like it might have been over the weekend.
Right.
They had like every one of those quarterbacks we were talking about, except Penix, I think.
Right.
They invited them into Washington, and they're all there together. now. I mean, they know who they're going to pick.
Yeah. They'll take Penix. Because they're Washington.
I didn't think of that, because they are the Washington Commanders. Or the Commies, as we might call them.
But speaking of draft news, this is we're going to veer in another direction. Kiki Jefferson from Lancaster Catholic got drafted to the WNBA draft the other day. So good for her. She's going to Minnesota Lynx, you said? And
yes.
So what's your understanding of... I mean, you said you saw her in high school back in the day.
I saw her play in high school. I've not seen her play in college. Here's the thing that I think is impressive about her. A thing that's impressive about her. Mm-hmm. She's about 6'1".
Okay.
And she's a really physically strong kid.
Okay.
So in high school, she was sort of... She could overpower people.
Right.
She was...
Yeah, she is big.
A great rebounder.
Uh-huh.
And she still is a good rebounder for a guard.
Right.
At this level. She went to James Madison.
And then Louisville later.
And then transferred to Louisville for this past season. Mm-hmm. Louisville had been like to the Final Eight 3 years in a row or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they had lost a lot of people, so there was going to be an opportunity for her to play. Mm-hmm. Louisville won. They went like 24-10 mm-hmm. or something like that. I think they lost in the first round of the tournament, or second round. But she led them in scoring.
Okay.
They had balanced scoring. So it was like 12.5 points, mm-hmm. like 5 rebounds a game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things I've heard about this Minnesota team is that they have a lot of guards.
Okay.
So it might be tough for her just to make the roster. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the women's basketball players, I mean, there's a lot of opportunities overseas, as there is for men's basketball players. And you can make money overseas relative to the WNBA, mm-hmm. as I understand it. So she's going to be able to play professionally somewhere, I'm sure. But the thing I got off track here. The point I want to make about her is I think she really became more of a guard, developed skills, mm-hmm. ball handling, shooting. She's an excellent free throw shooter.
Mm-hmm.
She did a really nice job in college of just getting better when it was sort of, it wasn't easy for her in high school. And they won a state championship her senior year, but it wasn't easy, but she could really physically overpower. I was so struck with how strong she was mm-hmm. in high school, and she's become a lot more than that. Mm-hmm.
I meant to check this before, but Marcus is her dad. I think Marcus played at Lancaster Catholic back in the day, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I think Tony is the Tony Jefferson that played at McCaskey and went to Herb McGee.
Yeah.
Played for Herb McGee. I think he's an uncle.
Okay.
In the family.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's interesting.
Yeah, she's got good basketball genes.
So, yeah, so we wish her well, obviously.
And she seems like a really nice kid. I've interviewed her a few times and what a great opportunity. I think she's really done, but again, really getting better in college. After she got to college, I give her some credit mm-hmm. for that.
And the other topic we wanted to tackle was you had some, you wrote a piece about the Barnstormers on Sunday and saying about how they're kind of not wedded to the long ball, that they're going to play more small ball this year.
Actually the other way around.
Oh, my
bad. They have played, Ross Peebles, their manager.
Right.
Likes small ball.
Mm-hmm.
He likes the bunt and the hit and run and the steal. Last year, they have, I don't know if you've ever been in this, folks, if you've ever been in this ballpark, but they have a very short porch in right field.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very favorable home run park, especially for left-handers. But Ross's preference is that they don't even think about that and just be disciplined about getting a good pitch to hit. So anyway, they were last in the Atlantic League in home runs last year.
Right.
First in batting average. First in stolen bases, and they had more than twice as many sacrifice bunts as anybody else in the Atlantic League.
I can respect that because the trend certainly at the major league level is way away from that.
That's how he likes to do it. And I was almost thinking, now this is really overthinking it, but they put artificial turf in their stadium now. Maybe it's going to be a little faster. Maybe it would make more sense to play that way. But here's what happened, an interesting thing that happened. The Mexican League, which their season runs concurrent to the Atlantic League, and they pay better.
Mm-hmm.
The Mexican League is now allowing more than twice as many non-Mexicans per team
mm-hmm.
than they used to.
Mm-hmm.
So like the first 5 guys in their batting order from last year are going to be in Mexico.
Isn't that crazy?
So they're probably not, they may not be able to play the way they did. They may just not have the horses to do that. Mm-hmm. And of course, Ross, I talked to him about this, and he said, well, you know, we might have to do it differently. I have to figure out what these guys do well and what mm-hmm. they have more new players than usual. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of big power arm type guys in the pitching staff. They have mm-hmm. they have a 6'10 guy
Ooh.
And a 6'8 guy and Jeez. A couple of 6'6 guys. And they have the pitcher who 2 years ago when they won the championship, they won the championship 2 years in a row. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, they had a guy, his name's Oscar De La Cruz, who was just dominant down mm-hmm. the stretch. And he was the MVP of the pitcher, mm-hmm. starting pitcher. He was the MVP of the playoffs and everything. Well, he went to Mexico last year. Now he's back. But, of course, he's every year they have visa problems with getting their guys into the country. So
saying that,
he's one of the guys. He's from the Dominican. They have two guys who are from the Dominican, and apparently there is paperwork issues with Dominican and the State Department and every year the Barnstormers have to deal with that. But so those guys will be here soon. They open I think on Thursday.
I think
2 days from now they open, and then their home opener is next a week from today, next Tuesday the 30th.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a fun thing in the summer.
It kind of is. So how much do you expect to cover them this year?
I think about the past, you know, the with the U.S. Women's Open coming to Lancaster.
That's right.
That's gonna dig into it a little bit, maybe a lot during that couple weeks, and then after that, there's a stretch where I'm there pretty often until we start cranking up Penn State again. So
it'll be here before you know it.
Yeah, it will. That's how it always goes, and right now there's a lot of different things that are kind of coming to a head in my work, but the Barnstormers, and it's their 20th anniversary,
mm-hmm.
and you know, they changed their name in what I thought was a dubious move. They shortened their nickname from Barnstormers to Stormers, and
branding. It's all about the branding.
It's all about the branding. But here's the goofy thing about it. They changed their name. And then I thought, well, I don't really see why they did that. But if you're going to do it in the off season. Let people get bent out of shape for 4 or 5 days, and then it'll be mostly forgotten. Well, then, like, a few weeks later, they go on social media, and people on their front office staff are, like, reading these letters from fans, like, reading emails from fans and kind of laughing
at that. Why would you risk alienating the fan base? I don't get that.
It does seem forgotten. I mean, I was there for the whole fan fest thing on Saturday, and I don't think it's going to be a big deal. But
yeah.
Such an odd move from what I think is a pretty good organization. Really
seems like it. Yeah. I mean, and as we speak, they're actually having a meet the team night down at the Lancaster County Convention Center that was scheduled for tonight. So
there you go.
But yeah, so baseball's upon us.
Yep.
How have they been drawing these letters? They've won the title the last 2 years, correct?
Yep, that is correct.
And how have they drawn these last 2 years?
Pretty good for the Atlantic League, not comparable to the first couple years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were putting 5,000 people in there pretty regularly. Now it's 2,700, mm-hmm. 3,200, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is fireworks when they have fireworks.
People. I'll be honest with you. I don't understand. I don't get why people get so gazzed out about fireworks. It's like one of those things. It's like, okay, they're kind of nice, but it doesn't excite me.
Especially when it's every Saturday night.
Yes. I don't get the whole firework. That's one of the things I just don't get.
And if you're living in the neighborhood and you don't care about the Barnstormers,
What are you thinking every Saturday night?
Yeah. And then the games are getting over pretty late, you know.
Yes.
I mean, it's baseball. It can go on and on, you know, mm-hmm. as you know. But anyway.
So what are you working on immediately? What's in your immediate future as far as what you're going to be writing? What can we expect?
Well, I just wrote today the All-State high school basketball team.
Okay.
Which it's actually embargoed until midnight tonight.
Okay.
but so we have five guys that made it.
Great.
There's six teams plus a non-PIAA. There's mm-hmm. one for every classification mm-hmm. and then a non-PIAA team. So there's that, and I'm doing high school baseball. Doing high school baseball.
The weather is starting to turn maybe a little bit, so you can actually sit and watch a game without getting frostbite.
Yep, I hope so, because I'm going to Pequay Valley tomorrow.
There you go.
We haven't done anything with Section 4 yet, and there's some teams that are having pretty good years.
Yeah, you do have to think about it that way. I can remember thinking about it that way, you know, in all sports. You know, you try to give people a fair shake, even though people don't think you're trying to give them a fair shake.
Well, yeah, they definitely don't think that. Yeah, that's for sure. Sure, but so you know it's high school. It's pretty fun. I enjoy.
Yeah, it's it. I mean, it's my beef with it is always the weather. And you know, by the time the weather really turns, that's when the fewest teams are playing. That's always been my beef.
Yeah,
it's like those are the games you really enjoy covering. It's like, oh well, where's everybody else? Yeah. They're sitting at home. You know.
Ideally, high school baseball would be played in the fall, but obviously that's never going to happen for obvious reasons.
No.
But. So there's that, and I have been working on U.S. Open stuff. There's a lot of stuff that goes with that. I was out on Sunday out at Lancaster Country Club to talk to the U.S. mid-amateur champion, who is exempt from qualifying because of that championship, and she is a 31-year-old research scientist with a PhD in chemical engineering from MIT.
Other than that, she's got nothing going on.
Other than that, she's got nothing going on. And she, so it was fun to talk to her.
I love talking to people like that.
And she went to University of Wisconsin, undergrad, chemical engineering, played on the golf team. And then while she was at MIT, she didn't play much golf. She's only 31. Uh-huh. The mid-amateur, for people who don't know, is for age 25 and up.
Okay.
Because the college kids who are kind of apprentice pros so dominate, like the U.S. amateur and those really the most elite amateur events. So, you know, she said she's a really straight driver. That's her strength. And that's going to come into play in the U.S. Open because of the rough and all that. She said, well, the rough is, I asked her what she thought of the course, and she said, well, the rough is really long and thick. And I'm thinking, well, I'll tell you, kid, it's going to be a lot longer and a lot thicker in a month. So, so we'll see how it goes. She's obviously a long shot, but it's cool that amateurs get to play in these things.
Yeah, it is.
You know, they do get a little bit of a varied kind of, and anybody who has a certain handicap can try to qualify. We have a high school kid.
Yeah, yeah, I remember you mentioning Warwick girl, right?
Yeah, L Overly. She's going to try to. I think hers is in early next month.
Okay.
So it might be next week or the week after. They had like almost 1,900 entries. There's roughly 95 to 100 people, players who are going to be exempt. So you're probably looking for about 50 or 60 spots that, that 1,800 people are playing
for. That's the strainer's pretty tight there.
And then you get a number at the end of the day and that's it, you know, there it is. So that's going to be our thing.
Interesting. I drove past Lancaster Country Club the other day, and I saw that there was some sort of pavilion set up. I don't know if that's the media pavilion or the VIP pavilion, but whatever it was, you could see it from the road.
They have to create a kind of a stadium there and a kind of a mini city of tents. It looks more like, when I was there on Sunday to talk to this golfer, you could see it was starting to take shape and starting to look like what it's going to look. They still haven't put up grandstands yet. That's sort of the last thing, which I thought was strange. But merchandise tent, hospitality, that kind of stuff. Still don't have the media tent up.
Okay, so that wasn't the media thing I saw.
No, it wasn't. No.
Okay.
No, I know where it's going to be, and it wasn't. I don't think they even started on that yet.
Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing, they know how to do this. They've done it before, so they know the lay of the land and literally and how to go about, you know, meeting everyone's needs.
Yeah, and there's a piece of it that is kind of run by the local people, and there's a piece of it that's run by the United States Golf Association, and it's a bigger piece. The USGA part is bigger now. They've gotten more in-house people to run these events. So it might be a little bit less of a volunteer element from local people. And there's a lot of little things about it that are going to be different. But essentially, it's going to be very similar to what it was 9 years ago.
Yeah, so that's I think it's great. I mean, I'm sure that the traffic will not be a great thing. I think we were away the last time it was here, so I didn't experience any of that. So
you bailed.
It was actually coincidental, but yeah. So because that was like 2015, is that when it was?
Yeah, 15.
Yeah, that was when we went and visited our son in New Zealand because he was an exchange student.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So that was when we missed that. So ahead for me is like I talked to that Evan Horn the other day. As you know, he's gone beyond his college career at New Hampshire, a very successful college career. He now works for a financial firm in Lebanon where he works for Tom Gearhart, who actually had a 10-year professional career, which included going to the Eagles training camp 3 years. And he also played in 3 NFL games in 1992 when Kotite was the coach of the Eagles.
He played in a playoff game.
Yeah, well, yeah. 2 playoff games.
Oh, 2 playoff games. Yeah. Oh, I thought they lost.
So he played 10 years in all between CFL and NFL, and he actually played for those Chambersburg Cardinals.
Oh,
so and then he had to give it up because of a neck injury. He said he broke his neck in a game, which sounded horrendous, and then continued to play, which probably wasn't a great idea. But so they're working together, and you know, Evan had a real nice career at New Hampshire. And I asked the question I always ask of these people who play big time sports, you know, how do you replace the rush? And he said, the way he does it, he plays basketball at 5:20 a.m. against teachers and such over at Cedar Crest High School.
Oh,
so
yeah,
2 days a week. So that's
I heard that somebody said he's going to be coaching somewhere.
Yeah, he's coaching at Cedar Crest. He's going to be the safeties coach. Yeah, and his brother is going to be the quarterbacks coach. Yeah, we talked about that too. And he's also getting married next summer. In fact, he's getting married to a girl he said they first dated when they were freshmen at Cedar Crest. So how's that for staying power, huh?
Wow.
So that's impressive.
Holy moly.
But, you know, as you know, he's a really impressive kid. You know, so it's...
He really is. And he was, I think, close to being... Played Division One. One FCS football and Division One basketball for a year.
Then he said the only time he really suffered a serious injury was when he broke a finger in basketball practice.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't really get any serious injuries in football in New Hampshire.
Yeah,
which is
he's the kind of guy who if he'd have been he's like 6 foot 200 pounds.
Right.
If he'd have been 6'2", 225. Or if he'd have been a 4.3 40 guy instead of a 4.5 40 guy.
Yeah.
He really was a great athlete, but not quite a perfect fit for any like big time pro sport, but close.
Yeah. Had a real nice career at New Hampshire.
So he had something like in his college career, something like 5 pick sixes.
Is that right?
And one of them was for 0 yards. He caught a streak. He intercepted a streak pass right on the goal line.
So that's interesting. I did not realize that because I went looked over his numbers, but I didn't realize how many pick sixes he had.
I think that's right.
I'll have to go look at it. I know he had a fair number. I think he had like 13 career interceptions, a really nice number, and over 200 tackles. So, yeah, he had a real nice career.
Yep.
The other thing I'm working on is what I mentioned before, just about the Sixers and their playoff disappointments. I was originally going to go and talk to Nick Batum tomorrow, but that story doesn't quite fit where the Sixers are. So I talked to Bob Ryan today, and after we're done here, I want to talk to Jim Lynham just about that, because I'm sure he'll have some interesting thoughts about Sixers playoff.
He was pretty adamant in the post game last night. He was pretty fired up.
I'm sure he was.
Yeah.
As Jimmy gets...
And just like not like a fan, but just like, I can't believe they weren't better organized, like the inbounding play there. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I really want to ask him is like how often that happens where you're calling a timeout and you don't get it because they don't see you or they're wrapped up or whatever. I'm sure he'll have an interesting thought about that.
And you know, so much happened.
Yeah.
In that little sequence, there's so much happening.
Yeah.
It was really kind of interesting.
It was.
But if you're a Sixers fan, it was like,
how can this happen?
Yeah.
So now they have to win 4 out of 5 with at least one of those wins coming on the road. And I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
I don't think it's out of the realm of, but it's on Embiid. If he's healthy,
and
no doubt they could do it if he's healthy.
But he just doesn't. I mean, the thing I really noticed at the end of the game, they would try to run a pick and roll, and he couldn't move.
Yeah.
He couldn't run.
Yeah.
You know?
He can't do so many things. It's amazing that he can still score, but he scores so easily. He's one of the most He's one of the best in the history of the game in that specific thing, being able to score so easily.
Right.
And so efficiently.
Yeah, more points than minutes played, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Than anybody in league history, which, you know, it didn't even dawn on me until somebody wrote that, like, real early this season. It was like, really? More efficient than Wilt.
Part of it is that he doesn't play the minutes.
Right.
He's always hurt, but still.
Still. He still scored. Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
And here's the interesting thing. He's coming up on his 30th birthday. I mean, it'll be interesting to see, what the trajectory of his career is these next couple years, and B, how we come to regard, because he's been a really great player.
He's
but there's always that, the health issue, the lack of playoff success, all that stuff. How do we regard him?
And I'm generally dubious about the idea of guys being injury prone,
mm-hmm.
but in his case, it's such a big body, and it just I think
he's broken down every year but one. But 2020, that was the year they got swept by Boston.
I really am. Well, there you go. I think he,
It's a very, very interesting. See, my view of Sixers history, that this, I've been trying to reach Willie Burton, who had a 53-point game for the Sixers in 1994. He's like an adjunct professor at the University of Minnesota. I've been trying to reach him for months, and he's not.
What university?
University of Minnesota. Because that's where he played,
That's where he played, right.
So I've been trying to reach him because my view of Sixers history is that everything is a comet. You know, like, you know, you had Julius, he won one title. You know, you had Wilt, he won one title. You had Iverson, he made it to the finals once. Barkley never made it. You have all these guys that are like these comets, you know, across the firmament. And that was what Willie Burton
that's
was.
An interesting point. Yeah, so, that's a good theme. Run with that.
I'm gonna. If I could reach Willie, I would.
I think you got one. Oh, you could reach somebody else. Somebody would talk
But I'd love to talk to Willie because...
Dana Barros.
Dana Barros. There's a good comet for you. Yeah. But it's like that's the entirety of Sixers history.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They have these comets that all of a sudden just flame out and, you know, and that's that. You know. So, that anyway. We'll leave on that thought, I suppose.
Yeah, I like it. I'm intrigued.
So
let's leave the audience intrigued. That's our goal. All right, gang. That's it. Wow. A lot of talking.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot to talk about.
Indeed.
All right, that's it, gang. We'll be talking to you again soon. He's Gordy. I'm Mike. See you later.
See you later.